Hello and welcome to this latest episode of Lost Baggage Podcast. I am your host, Brian Whitford, joined today by my very, very good friend, The Mill, Sam Miller. How are you today?
Brian, I'm doing well. Rainy day here in Delhi, New York, but, you know, no complaints. It's been 70 degrees the last few, so, yeah. Not a complaint here.
It is pitch black in Prague. We were talking before. I actually don't think the sun came up today at all. It was a long, cold one, but it is what it is. It's that time of year. Turkey shoot weather, I like to say.
Absolutely, absolutely.
You remember back to the Dryden high school days? That's right in your backyard. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, grew up in Ithaca, man. Turkey shoot for life.
Yeah. So your background, Ithaca, upstate guy, right down the road from me. I never met you till college, but tell us about your background, how you. You know, we're introduced to lacrosse. You know, obviously your family was a big athletic family. Tell us about the Mill.
All right. So, I grew up in Ithaca, New York, moved there when I was four. Really was a hockey player first, started at age six. And actually at age six, I was late to the game, you know. It's funny, if you look at some of there's a picture from my initiation, which is like your first year playing. I was the only six-year-old. Everyone else was five. And I'm already taller than a couple of the coaches in the picture. It's an all-time picture. I'll have to look it up. But so I played hockey throughout, played some baseball. It wasn't until eighth grade that I started lacrosse. And actually, it was the summer before. I tried it out at the Youth Bureau. After one practice, I said, you know, I got to play this. You know, and my neighbor is Jeff Long. He coached at, he's still the coach at Ithaca College. And, you know, so he gave me my first stick, and I really never looked back from there.
Jeff Long is probably going to be in the Hall of Fame.
I would say so, yeah. He played at Navy. He's been the coach at Ithaca for in between 20 and 30 years. I mean, he's one of the GOATs for sure.
Like, everyone – I forget who I was listening to just the other day. I think it was Tam Brony coached with him. Like, everyone's – I might have that wrong. Anyway, everyone has a great opinion of Longman.
Yeah, he's very well respected, for sure.
Yeah. So then started – not late. You know, everyone starts when they start.
It's a little late. So, then I played at Ithaca High School. I played there, played modified and then JV into varsity. And then actually I went to Salisbury School in Connecticut and did a year and a half there. So I got to see kind of what it was like to play in a private school league. It was super competitive. We had 12 or 13 Division I players on our team both years I was there. So that obviously, you know, that was an eye-opening experience. And it was an awesome experience getting to play with some guys that went on to great places with, you know, an awesome coach and Bobby Wynn there, who's, you know, one of the best players ever out of Hobart. So after that, I went to Salisbury University, played two seasons there under Coach Jim Berkman, 2009 and 10. Lost the national championship 2010 to Tufts. Still looking back, you know, that's kind of one of the worst lacrosse memories, even though it was great getting there with that group of guys. And then after that, you know, things kind of switched. My mom got sick. My grades weren't great. You know, things kind of swapped. And I ended up coming back north, and ended up at Brockport. And actually, that's where you and I met. I ended up at Brockport to finish out my degree and finish out my playing career. So I played, you know, two seasons there, one with you. One after, both with your brother on the team as well. And so, after I got done playing, I wasn't quite sure exactly, you know, what, and I guess it's kind of like, it's kind of the topic of some of your podcasts and the topic of really of your whole life is, you know, after I got done playing college lacrosse, I wasn't exactly sure what I was going to do with the sport. Or with my life even. And so,
Now what with everything. Yeah. I mean, exactly. that's kind of where, I mean, I got out of there a little bit before you, but, you know, I remember just being not lost because I think I had something to do the next day, every day. Sure. But it was like, where's this going? Like, you know, not just lacrosse, but like, what am I supposed to be doing right? Like, it was the first time ever, you know, I'm 23 and I've talked about this before on here. It's like for the first time in your life, you're 23 years old and you do not have a script. You know, your parents took, you know, you were going to high school no matter what, right? College was, I guess, a decision, but it really wasn't. And then you graduate and it's like, now you you have a choice for the first time in your life. You know, are you going to go do whatever? Are you going to join the army? Are you going to get a job? Are you going to go to Wall Street? Are you going to, you know, go fly planes? Like, what are you going to do? And that's kind of where I get a little, where does your coaching kind of deal go?
After I left Brockport, I moved to Virginia. You know, I was with my now ex-girlfriend, but still, you know, looking back, it's good that I chased her down there. And ended up coaching 2 years at Randolph-Macon with J.B. Sheridan, who, weirdly enough, he recruited me when I was at Salisbury. He was a grad assistant. And so, the, you know, the lacrosse world connections, right? Everyone knows everybody. So I asked if I could just be a volunteer while I lived in the area. And he let me help out. I did that as well as we ran a club team in the area called Militia Lacrosse. And we had some pretty good players. I mean, this is in Richmond, Virginia, you know, in like 14 and 15. And we had some kids, you know, it was still kind of, especially in the public schools in Virginia, it was still kind of a newer sport. But we had a kid that went on to play at Duke, a kid that played Mount St. Mary's, a kid that played at Richmond, you know, some pretty good lacrosse players that 10 years ago, those were football players. Right. But
yeah,
now people are putting lacrosse sticks in their hands.
Yeah. I remember we went down to, we played one high school game in Loudoun Valley. Like my high school took a trip down, played against Fairfield Prep and beat them in overtime. And then we played against this team called Loudoun Valley and they were massive. They were football kids. They were just, they mangled us, but we beat them 16-0. Like now yeah. I bet they're that same size and I bet they could play lacrosse. You know,
well,
that
we had one. Yeah. We had one player. Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, you're good.
We had one player who, you know, he was choosing, he was a senior playing his senior's fall. I remember. And he was choosing whether he was going to go play D3 lacrosse or D1 football. And he chose football. He went and played football at JMU, but, you know, it's like these are the kind of kids that you're getting. And it's just a different breed of kid than kind of the upstate model. And not that there aren't, you know, I'm a pretty big guy myself. But so that was a different, but it was a different kind of lacrosse for me. And it was cool to be able to teach, kind of give a guy his first stick and be the first one to kind of teach him, you know, some of the ins and outs of the game. Right. And then I finally came back. You know, I needed to come back and finish my degree at Brockport, actually. So I ended up coming back, taking the couple classes I needed. And Coach Weinberg, you know, our coach, he allowed me to help out as a volunteer also that spring. And so that was in 2015. After that, the Delhi job opened up. I applied for it and got it. And I've been here ever since. This will be my fifth season. So.
Are you 100% sure about the year? I thought it was 2016.
Sorry, you're right. You're right. 16 spring, I coached at Brockport. You're right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was just going to.
That's the same summer that.
I'm going to tie it all together here. Yeah. So you and I were both, you know, spoiler alert. If you wanted to look up our statistics or playing, we were towards the end of the bench at Brockport. And I'd like to think that I'm a decent lacrosse player. I think you're pretty good. But we spent some time towards the other end and I think we're better box players than our field players, you know, you and me both. But we took a summer out in Vermont. We went up to play with the Vermont Voyagers. How do you remember that story starting up? Cause I have my tale, but I want you, this is your show.
I remember I came back to, you know, to the area. Obviously, 2015 fall, I kind of traveled around the country a little bit and did a little sightseeing. I ended up seeing you in Park City for a night or two, which was fun. You took me to the ski jumps.
That's right. That was that year.
Took me to the ski jumps. That was pretty cool. The Olympic training grounds. That was pretty cool. But
you were the only person who came out to visit me except for my mother. I don't think my brother ever even came out.
I'm glad to be one of two. I kind of lost my train of thought.
Yeah,
there.
So that's fall of 15. We kind of met up in Park City, talked about it, right? Mm-hmm. I remember, and then we kind of just kept in touch, like over the winter. I was working in Park City. I was working at the ski resorts, and
Before, so you had this senior lacrosse thing that you had planted into my brain. I didn't even know was a thing, right?
I was just getting back from Australia when you came to see me.
I mean, that's what I mean. You're playing post-collegiate lacrosse, right?
I was playing the best lacrosse of my life at that point. Oddly enough, I was 25 years old playing some of the best lacrosse I've ever played. And yeah, I made a couple bucks, and I just kind of got this thought in my head. I was like, hey, let's buy an RV and let's go play somewhere. And then, you know, you pretty much were like, yeah, let's do it. You know, it was,
Joe, Evans,
you, I have a lot of ideas, and some of them are bad, but you wouldn't let me fail it. Like, you were not letting me out of this one.
I really wanted to play. It sounded fun.
Yeah.
We had the connection with Joe Evans. He's my old college roommate from Salisbury. And so he, you know, they were looking for some bodies for the Voyagers for that summer. You know, that the core of guys who really made that team had started to, you know, they started to have kids, and they started to kind of, you know, move more towards living rather than lacrosse, which is, you know, a sad reality, but it is what it is. And, you know, a lot of them had young children, and so they were looking for bodies, and we were looking for an adventure. And so it really matched up great.
I remember you were sending me Craigslist ads of RVs like once or twice a day.
Yeah.
And then we ended up finding the 1981 Dodge Shasta in a Rochester. Yes. It was right outside of Brockport, actually.
It was basically in Brockport, which was crazy.
I remember it was listed for $3,500. You're like, well, dude, we got like I know that you were kind of towards, you know, you're still in school pretty much working as a volunteer coach,
scraping together some bucks.
Yeah, I was like, look, offer the guy $3,000 and, you know, we'll drive it away today. And they took it. They actually tell us what the original name, the original moniker that the original owners had given it.
So they drove it to some Kiss concerts. They were old rock and roll fans, and they called it the I'm pretty sure it was the Stabbin' Cabin.
Stabbin' Cabin. Yep.
Yeah. And it's, I'm just going to leave that one alone. But also the dad explained, cause there was children also, but the dad explained, it was, they did some like, cornfield stuff. And so they would use it as a prop and kind of paint it up with, you know, they'd put, for Halloween, right? They use it as like, so, you know, pretty cool. But either way, the thing's a relic.
Yeah, it was. I think it had something like ridiculous, like 15,000 miles on it. That's a ridiculously low number.
Yeah, it was
brand new. Had a Dodge 440. It was like the biggest engine Dodge ever made. That's, I think you told me that later on. and it was like, you know, we bought it for $3,000. Like that's easy. Like, sure. You know, end of the story, we end up selling for $2,300. That's a $700 rental split two ways. Like, that's an easy summer, right? Like, what, $350 bucks each?
No, I dare you
find rent for $350 bucks anywhere. I tell you, like, I dare you. Mm-hmm. I'm in the Czech Republic. It's more than that. Do you remember driving it up there?
So we got it in I want to say like maybe late April. And you and I weren't going to go out there till about Memorial Day. And so it sat in the parking lot, and I asked the apartment I was staying at, I asked if it could sit out there. They said, I guess, just keep it on the side. Sat in the parking lot for a while, and we definitely had a couple of day parties out there just to, you know, just test it out, make sure that it could handle the carrying capacity, right? But yeah, I remember you showed up and here we go. And it took us a long time because I don't think it went past 55 miles per hour. I mean, you tell me.
Downhill,
for 55.
If you pitched it down a hill, I think it got up to 70, but it was like more like you were in free fall. Like I dare you to stop it. Like, you were never going to get that thing to stop moving. Like, if you were going downhill.
We had my little Subaru Outback, and we had the Shasta, and we had me and you, and we had our two dogs.
And I remember
Rockport out to Vermont.
we weren't able to, like, so driving it there, you were like my lead blocker. If I wanted to shift over, I would signal, you would move out from in front of me to behind me and then move over again. And so I could move into the left lane.
God,
you know, I wasn't passing anybody, but, you know,
it took us. Well, that's, and we, but we said that at the start. You know, and it's kind of, it really could sum up the whole thing. Take your time, right? And the journey is kind of half the fun. We're going to get there eventually. And we didn't have a deadline. I think we went out for the tryouts in our car. And then when we were going out to play, we didn't have a game for another couple of weeks, I don't think. So like there was no timeline on us getting out there. We just needed to get it from point A to point B.
And we needed to figure out where we were actually. I remember we did not know where we were going to stay.
No.
With
the bandit lifestyle.
Oh man, that was actually pretty stressful. Like,
it was.
So this is a great adventure, right? And it's an awesome story. I love that we did it, but for sure. I do remember that was a stressful. Awesome stories have more or less low points and like stressful points. Like that's what makes them great stories. That was I didn't know where we were gonna sleep each night.
No, it was disagreement. Like, are we gonna be able to do this? Are we actually here? We are in Vermont. We got the RV. Are we going to be able to find a place where we can set up and kind of call it home? And also, where are we going to get our water from? There was big question marks that we were trying to answer. And so the first week was definitely stressful.
How on earth did we find Eden, Vermont? I don't remember.
So I got us on this one actually. So
okay, good.
Your uncle Vinny lives in Johnson. Okay, So we slowly made our way to Johnson. We stopped a few different places and we thought about maybe here, maybe there, but we knew that Vinny and Angie and the boys would at least have, have us over, right? They would definitely have us over for dinner and it was a familiar face. And so
they would tolerate us, yes.
Yeah. Well, and they told us about Front Porch Forum. Remember that?
Yes.
Front Porch Forum is like the Craigslist of Vermont, but it's only for local stuff. It's like each neighborhood almost. Each little town has their own version of it. And so we were looking on Front Porch Forum and we found a guy, and I don't remember what even he was. Oh no, we put an ad up saying, yeah, you put an ad up in there saying, we have two guys, two dogs, RV, looking for some open land. We don't need any hookups. We don't need anything. We just want a place to park this thing, willing to pay like very minimal rent. And I don't remember his name, but you got someone to contact you. And we met him at that pizza place.
We met actually a bunch of people, more than you would think.
There's like four or five different people that offered us to stay for free in Vermont. So I'm just gonna say that I love Vermont.
I was very impressed. Like, and honestly, the one woman, her sons both played at like high level ball, lacrosse, like at St. Lawrence. And I was like, oh, this must be the place. But it turned out not to be the place. So we met that guy at the pizza place and he just wanted to hear the story. He's like, what are you doing? he's like, I got some property. Like, you know, there's some equipment back there. If someone was out there, it'd be okay because, it just kind of keep people out of there. So we went back to look at it and that was it. Like,
it was perfect.
It was literally perfect. Like, getting in and out of that road wasn't that bad, but like with the RVs, like this thing's parking once this summer.
and then jumping ahead, but we'll get there eventually. But then me and your brother got it out, and it took us about a 32 point turn to get that thing turned around. Man,
I'm surprised it was not more than that. But yeah, I remember we went back there with like a handsaw and like a machete and like a shovel, and I was like, okay. Let's clear this place out and park this in there. Cause I mean, we had a differing opinion of where to put it. I think, I don't know who's was correct in the end, but wherever we put it,
it was perfect.
Perfect.
Yeah. I don't remember. Break
out the, there was not arguments, but two spirited opinions.
Absolutely.
But we I still have the picture, man. Like Reptar, my dog. And he was just out in front of we built the, so when I was raking it out, I picked up all the rocks and we made this beautiful, fire pit. We cooked all of our meals over there and like we pulled out these, tarps from the roof and like made like a kind of covered area. And oh man, it was just like,
we had it.
It was Eden, Vermont. It was literally, and there was that little shed.
Sustainable for more, for forever, definitely not. But no. For the time, it was all that we needed, and it was awesome.
Man, cooking potatoes right in the fire, like you know, how many pots and pans did we absolutely ruin on that fire? But like, whatever, all of them was the right answer. Game of Thrones spoons, like, yeah, yep. It's just, yeah.
No, it was really cool.
And my and bowl, I think, you had your bowl. It's like, if you didn't wash it, you didn't have a bowl.
Exactly. It was simple. We cut out the extra, you know, we cut out the extra. And even when we went to play that summer, you know, we had our gear. Yeah. That was it.
I remember like throwing gear on top of the roof, like unnecessarily. I'm like, I just want to throw my gear on top of an RV roof. Like, that's where I want it to be.
I think, you know, it was great for both of us because, you know, you had kind of been going place to place to place to place and I had been moving around a little bit too. And so, you know, even though it was only for a month or a month and a half, I mean, it was cool because we didn't really care about anything else. You know, we kind of worried about what was right in front of our face and the, like, you know, the lacrosse game, who we were playing that weekend. But during the week, you know, maybe we had a job or two, and I guess that's a segue maybe into some of those
stories. Here we go.
But really it was more spent like, you know, we read some books and we talked and we walked the dogs and we hiked and I don't know. It was awesome.
There was that little shed there and I pulled a couple books out. That's where I got The World According to Garp. That's where I got A Prayer for Owen Meany. Like, they were just, you know, in a borderline abandoned, creepy shed. Yeah. Like, I pulled those books out of it. Yeah.
Like, mice had chewed on mice somewhere, everywhere. You know? Yeah. Yeah. Like, no, it's pretty cool.
But, so I was coming off of my work season. I was ready to chill for 3 months. Like, I was good. You were coming off of school and, you know, you got to make a couple bucks.
Well, and volunteer assistant coach.
Yeah.
So.
So there was, what other jobs were there besides
the window washing is the one I can think of. So we found someone, I don't remember if it was Craigslist.
I still have that phone number.
But we found someone who needed help with window washing at UVM. And it was a husband and wife, and they were an odd couple. And they had one cherry picker, you know, one kind of like lift. And really, the husband stayed in the lift all day, and the wife was kind of doing all the other stuff and teaching us what to do. But we'd never really done professional window washing or even amateur window washing, really. You know,
just a hobbyist, for fun.
here we are cleaning the dorms at UVM, and it was us two, and then like some teenagers. So it was like, you know, two like 20-something-year-old guys that who knows when the last time they showered was, and then like some teenagers like that are like more clean cut from the high school down the road. They're kind of like, who are these two?
I know that you did it for a little while longer, but
yeah,
coming off of working 16 hour days, like for 3-4 months, like I had, I know that I lasted about 3 days at that job.
I think you did three. Yeah. And I think I did nine. I'm not going to sit here and tell myself, you know, but I made the money I needed. So we're all good.
I remember there was $11 an hour cash. And I was just like, not doing
brutal.
This.
Brutal. And it was like, you know, part of it was cool until it was 87 degrees and you're on top of a 10 story building. You're like, okay. Or not was, 10, still 4 or 5 story, you know.
There was one good-looking girl. I talked to her once. I was like, oh, you know, I might be okay to kind of come back to this job every day. And then I was like, nah, I'm not doing this. No. But we did. You found this one on Craigslist. You know, knock on wood, Craigslist has never turned me – like, I've never been murdered.
It's been good to me. I got to say, it's been good to me.
Yeah. Craigslist is fine. I think – so, like, I got Reptar off of – like the predecessor of Craigslist, like before pre-Craigslist, I got Reptar as a puppy. Like it was even sketchier back then, if that's possible.
Disclaimer though, like Brian says, Craigslist is fine. Disclaimer, like we cannot say it's always fine, right? But
I can also say it's certainly not always fine. I got the place I stayed in Hawaii for 3 months. I got that one off Craigslist too. So Sam finds this job posting on Craigslist, and it's for hunting dog training. And it more or less boils down to, hey, we need people to assist in our, like, we are professional dog, hunting dog training, like, not like to actual go hunting, but like the sport of it. Like, and so they, you take it from here, buddy.
Like, sure. So, yeah. I mean, so basically like these, it was a group of guys that were, they were training these people how to do, the hunting dog competitions. And so not like, hey, you're out hunting ducks with your friends, the ones that you even see on TV where, they have the whistle and the dog looks back and they do like a big point to one way. And then the dog runs over and they're looking for, you know, the animal, right? They're looking for the animal. There's actually really never any shots being fired or animals being killed during this, right? It's really about the dog finding it and the owner communicating to the dog where it is. And so, I mean, I just...
In theory.
And so what we had was, we had a bunch of rich people who were not from Vermont that were paying these people to teach them how to do it. But they weren't even in the professional circuit. They were going to join the amateur circuit. So this is like the, you know, the senior of dog hunting or of dog you know, training, right? And I mean, it was an unbelievable job. I mean, Brian had actually
separated his shoulder.
Go ahead.
the day before, right? We got a game up in. I know it was against the Capital Region Axemen. So we were up in
right over the border in Messina, I think.
Was that in Messina? Anyway, we were in Canada playing it's, you know, Quebec Senior League lacrosse, and you're really not supposed to clear the ball up your own bench side, and you know, I it was off a draw and I picked it up and I'm like, oh, you know, I got a lane, I can take this run. Guy absolutely cleaned me out. It might have been my buddy Ryan Dewar. I'm friends with him now. But I get absolutely crunched in the boards. Five guys pile on my back, and something's not right. So I get up. I'm like, oh, you know, I'm going to need a shift off. Can't lift up my arm. It's tingling. I'm like, I'm probably done. Mick Godot got hurt that same game. And I think that was the first of two. No, because that was the second of two games.
Yep.
And, so I was like, well, I don't know how that's going to affect – my hunting dog training tomorrow. So yep. The shoulder got worse as the night progressed, and it got really tight, and I, you know, put me in a sling. I had separated my other shoulder in college, so I knew what this was. And we show up the next morning, and the guy goes, you know, the you know, he's Louisiana, like, you know, we'll say
deep southern
boys. Yep. They look at me, they're like, you left-handed? And I'm like, I am now.
That was classic, man. That was the best answer ever. Cause then they knew that we were ready to work.
They loved us, man.
They did.
So the job actually entailed, do you want to go over our duties?
Sure. So, basically, you know, what we had to do was they would set us up on a spot, and we had a burlap sack full of dead birds. And I don't mean that in like, I mean, literally dead birds. They were recently dead pheasants or dead ducks. I mean, like, you know, not dead for long. And then we had a shotgun, but it was like a little single barrel shotgun and a blank shell for the sound of the gun, right? That's how they do this. And so they told us to go to this, to wherever spot we there, where they wanted us. And then they told us where they were going to be. And when they raised their hand, we were going to shoot the shotgun and throw a bird in the air as high as we could, because you want the dog to see the bird kind of fall out of the sky, right? That's the goal. So here comes Brian with one arm, and I gotta give it to him. He figured it out. He kind of, and granted, if this was a real gun, I want to be nowhere near him, right? But at least it's a blank. Go ahead, pick it up.
I will admit I shot that gun off a little close to your ears a couple times. So I am incapable of raising my arm. My right arm, my dominant arm. I've never thrown anything in my life with my left arm. I've never thrown a rock with my left arm, not once. And so I'm like, all right, well, how is this going to work? I can't throw the duck with my right arm. Therefore, I have to shoot the gun with my right arm. So I was putting the gun into the butt into my gun, holding it. I'm doing this now so I can kind of holding the trigger with one finger. And, you know, because it was just a little tiny popper. It was just, like I was just pulling the trigger and letting the gun hit me in the hip, like, you know, reasonably hard.
You were hip firing it.
Yeah. And I was trying. Yeah, it's hip firing. And I was then I was trying to throw this duck and, you know, so you have to grab him by the neck. I'm a big animal guy. Like, I'm having a hard time with this, like, dead animal thing. So you grab this duck or you grab the pheasants by their feet. You throw the pheasants by their feet, you throw the ducks by their neck.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember a couple times, like, yeah, throw it high. And so I was, like, throwing it behind myself or, like, it was throwing it. It would just, like, go, like, you know, throwing it into the ground. Like, they're like, no, throw it higher. I'm like, oh, I'm trying.
So I got to say the hardest part was, so after you threw it, right, after you threw the duck, then you had these, we had these little blinds and they were like these tarps. And so we had to, like, after we threw it, we were supposed to be hidden because the dogs weren't supposed to know that we were there, because if they could find us, then they could find the animal, right? Because it'd be close to us. And so you would hear this dog sniffing around on the outside of your thing, and you couldn't say, you know, what's up? Hey, good boy, how you doing? You know, you weren't allowed to talk to him. You couldn't do anything. You had to just stay silent. And so these dogs would be sniffing all around. And you wanted to give him a little bit of a clue and help him out a little bit, right? Because that's how he's going to get a treat when he gets back. But you couldn't. You had to keep it, you know, keep it professional.
Yeah, and so I had the nickname of the one-armed bandit, which was Bandit for short. Anytime there's two Brians in a room, I still to this day say, I'll just call me Bandit. And I have friends in Europe who call me Bandit, like very few, but hey, what's up, Bandit? I'm like, and other people are like, is he talking to you? I'm like, yeah, long story. But I still go with the Bandit. I would love to be called Bandit. I'm cool with that one. I was Bandit. You had a nickname as well.
Yes, I did.
One of our disagreements was that I was in a sling, right, from separated shoulder, and we had to canoe out to one of these places. So the dog, you know, dogs could swim up to a duck and grab it as well. I was trying to get out of the canoe. I got out of the canoe successfully, and then I was trying to hold it with one hand, and it just didn't work. I think
we had a bag full of ducks. We had a bag full of ducks. We had two little popper guns. I mean, we had a full.
Bullets
everywhere. We had a full everything. For sure.
And you stood up. I to this day profess that you stood up in a canoe by yourself, and the canoe goes, you know, sideways.
I thought maybe it was a little more pulled out of the water than it was when I was sitting. It felt stable. As soon as I stood up, it was not stable.
Well, I think I was supposed to pull the canoe up onto land with my one arm, and one arm. It wasn't going so well. So there's a bag of dead ducks floating around. There's shells floating in the water. You're holding up a gun, you know, we're swearing at each other. And these Louisiana boys, these Deep South boys, are crying, laughing.
They loved it. They loved it every minute. And I was wearing jeans and boots and a long sleeve shirt. Like, I was soaked. I was up to my neck in water.
Luckily you went away. You went to the second blind and I stayed in my place and we did our thing. And then you were paddling out to someplace and you tipped the canoe again.
Yeah. Tipped it again. And at that point, you know, when you're wet, you can't get wetter. Right.
And I was with the Louisiana guys and the trainers, and they go, oh, well, I guess that solves it. We were arguing about whose fault it was. And I was like, yep, that was him, Scuba Steve over there. And they go, ah, Scuba Steve, that's so funny. So I got to admit, I came up with the Scuba Sam nickname. Nice,
like it. Yeah. No, it's, and you know, at the end of the day, we both got a really good tip from those people. And we put on a show, even though we didn't even mean to, right?
Well, they thought we were going to quit after that.
No, we showed up the next morning. Yep.
They thought we were, oh, we didn't think you boys were going to show back up. I was like, yeah, we want your money. Like,
yeah, no, it was honestly, it was cool though. You know, and it was interesting to see how serious and how much money these people put into it. And they're just amateurs. I mean, they had like the big dog trucks, you know, with like the kennels on the back, and they had all the nicest gear, all the nicest stuff. I mean, it's just a hobby for people who have a lot of money, I think. And, so it was fun for us to get to experience that a little bit, for sure.
Yeah, and we went into the locker room the next weekend, like, guys, you won't believe what we did this week.
Yep.
But that was towards the end of
sure.
the summer. And we'll kind of segue into that. I'm not done talking about the summer. Like, I just want to go back to, like, you know, in summation of this trip, like, you know, to, we were 25. We were both kind of at a crossroads in life where, like, you can kind of go wherever you want, but there's no one, like, asking for you. Right. There's no place for you. You don't belong anywhere. Like, I was working seasonally. Well,
at least you feel that way. Yeah.
You feel that way. And this, and like we were talking about before, like, anyone listening, you can also have that trip. You know, it's probably not with that same team. Right. It's not in that same place. It's not with that same exact, like, there's no program, but you can make these kind of things happen. And, and man, I remember feeling really fulfilled after that. Like, you know, I obviously left a little early, you know, the injury, and then an opportunity came up. But it was just, you can't have that opportunity later on in life. And I don't have kids. No. I don't have any reason I can't do that. But now I'm tied. You like, life will tie you down later
it
on.
Will.
Like, and that's not a bad thing.
Like you said earlier in the episode, we paid $350 each or whatever for rent for that whole summer. And, you know, like, we could probably talk for another hour about different things just from Vermont if we wanted to, if not longer, because, you know, and even some of the guys that we met that summer playing that now we've played on other teams with, or we've crossed paths with at other places. I mean, you know, like you said, it's not just us. We didn't just get lucky. If you want to continue to play lacrosse and let it kind of take you, you know, you're going to have to find a way to make some money. Right. But if you want to continue to play after college, there's a way for you to do that. And especially now, there's more and more things happening in stateside with box. You know, it's a cool time for sure. But
it was me and my buddy, right? I'm not 5 foot. I'm 5'9", right? I'm not big. I got a small hairy dog. I got long hair at this point in time. I'm living with my 6'6" big buddy and his 200,000-pound dog, right? I've got my little hairy dog. I mean, if anyone has not is not familiar with, you know, my college dog Reptar, like, I have never been closer to any person on this planet as I was close to that dog, who's not with us anymore. He passed away way too early, but
yeah, R.I.P. Doing great.
But to have that opportunity. He passed away maybe one. It was actually only 1 year later. It was the end of the next summer. So if I had said, hey, I'll take this trip with my dog and my friend and his dog, you know, an RV. Oh yeah. I'll put it up next year. Right. That's a different trip. You know, and obviously it might not even happen. Right. We were supposed to do it again. I was going to go out to BC. I was going to take the van. Yep. We were going to take Reptar out to BC and play for Nanaimo and it obviously came crashing down. I'm so thankful and so happy that you not pressured me, but you kept on me. Like, hey, this is a good idea. What are we doing to make it happen?
Well, I just, because I'd seen the things that you had done with lacrosse since you left. And like you said, I also saw, you know, the type of player that you were at Brockport. So I knew that you weren't going to play in a pro league somewhere off of your skill. No offense. We had some battles 1v1 too. I bet you probably got me more times than I got you. We'll have to settle the score sometime. But just seeing the way that lacrosse took you to these different places, I wanted a taste of it. I wanted to pick your brain. And so that's why I was so adamant about the Vermont thing, because I really wanted to do it. And you know, who better than the guy who'd been doing it for the last couple of years to kind of, at least, you know, springboard me to a direction where it's possible. You know, and look at how many teams we've played on since then, or how many things we've done since then.
I want everyone to have that opportunity, right? And it's just I don't know. It's not unique to us. Like, anyone can have it, but not everyone's built for it. You know, like, they have to kind of step outside and, you know, say, hey, I'm willing to put a couple bucks down. I'm willing to take a risk, you know. What's something that hasn't been, you know, not something that hasn't been done. Like, what do I want and what am I willing to do to get it? But yeah, that was a fantastic summer. And, you know,
for sure.
I do have to speak to the truth that I did bail on you.
Yes.
This came up in the Bloss podcast.
Yeah.
But, I separated my shoulder. Therefore, I was dropped from the playoff roster because I was not going to be healthy in time for playoffs in the queue. And so they picked up some guys from teams who didn't make playoffs. And I got a call from Connor Wilson. It's like, hey, do you want to come work with LAX All-Stars and cover the European Championships in Budapest with us? And I was like, yeah, I do. Sure. And so, we pretty much, I pretty much like, hey, Sam, I'm out of here.
Three days later.
Yeah. So
for sure, no hard feelings. I would have done the same. Going to Budapest, are you kidding me? Looking back on it, like, it was nice having Vin and Angie in the area. So I wasn't just like, I was an adult, right? I could handle myself, but it was an adventure getting that thing out of there. And I'm grateful that your brother came through, to kind of save the day a little bit. Cause we had to cut down a few trees, to get the thing out, man. I'm serious. And it was a process. And then it barely made it back to Oswego. We were on 90 cause we took it to Placid. I guess it's a good segue into Placid, right? But we took it to Placid that year, and we got to live in it and sleep on the grounds, which was like, the old school Placid. That's how it used to be, right? They would camp out.
That's what Placid I want, right? I have my van now, and like, they let us. Well, I shouldn't say. Anyway, I know they do not let me sleep there now. If you're listening.
It was cool because, getting to stay in the Shasta just one more week, and we were cooking breakfast the same way that you and I were cooking breakfast for each other. We were kind of doing that for Rich and for your dad. But the Shasta barely made it back to Oswego. I mean, we had to pull over. It was like Rick couldn't get it to go over 40 miles per hour on 90. It's a 65 mile per hour road. We was going 40. And it kind of started to smoke a little bit. And so we pulled over at a rest stop, and we were like, all right, are we going to make it? I mean, what's the deal here?
I tried to tell Eric how to drive it, and there you can play with it anyway. I ended up selling it to my buddy, like my childhood, lacrosse buddy, Steve McCroby. Yeah. He actually recently just beat testicular cancer, but he still has it. They plan on taking it to Bills games. I don't think they ever did. But they put a bunch of work into it. Apparently, it looks beautiful now. I'd love to see it again.
Well, and it got the job done. We had no issues. Let's
segue into Placid. I've only missed two Placids, and I missed the one where I was in Australia, and then the next one. When I went to Budapest, I was backpacking over Europe after the European Championships. Tell me what Placid means to you.
So I'm.
What's your experience?
Yeah, I got you. I'm not.
What do you do?
Well, so right now, I'll start at the start. Okay, so I'm definitely not like an old school Placid guy like you guys are, right? You guys have been coming with your old man since you were in middle school, right? Or earlier, maybe.
Maybe younger. Okay. Eric was reading Harry Potter books on the sideline. I remember that.
Yeah. And so I heard about Placid ever since I started playing lacrosse. I've heard about it, but I'd never made the trek. I'd never been up. And actually that summer when we went and worked one camp, that was another one of the jobs we did. We went and worked the youth camp up in Placid, stayed at what's his name? We stayed at your dad's friend's cabin. Come on, you got to remember his name. Big tall.
Paul Miser. Paul Miser's cabin.
Miser, yes. And so we stayed at his cabin and played there. And that was the first time we worked at Placid Youth. That's the first time I worked at Placid. And I was just I was on the tables just like anybody else.
That was your first time? I didn't know that was your first time. I thought you'd done it before.
Nope, that was my first time. And you guys had gone before. You'd had big groups with B-Wall and some other guys and stuff. And I'd always wanted to go, but it never worked out. It just never worked out. And so that summer I went and worked it. And I was still just a table guy. Well, I definitely have probably the biggest glow up in terms of promotion at Placid, but I now like I'm an independent contractor with them and I run the horse show grounds like fields. And so I'm really just I think the reason I flew up the way I did, being 6'6" and being able to kind of make friends with even just the wall kind of makes it a good fit for that job. But yeah, I mean, and not having it this year was unfortunate. Obviously, pending the circumstances, I understand. But you don't realize how much you miss it. I mean, in that place, it really is just that is where you go if you want, if you've played lacrosse or if you want to play lacrosse. I mean, you could be eating in a restaurant and two tables down, you know, are the Gate Brothers or are the Powells or are, you know, lacrosse names that you, when you grew up, you heard, you know, legends about, right?
Yeah, and here they are. You paid money to go see these guys play like Memorial Day weekend. And now they're like playing against you. They're hanging out with you. Yeah.
Exactly. And so, and everyone kind of lets their guard down a little bit, and it's still competitive. Don't get it wrong. But no one, you know, a lot of the egos are left behind, and really people are playing hard and having a good time when they're not playing. And, you know, I love it. I'm going to go, you know, till it's not no longer a thing. Right.
And it kind of just to piggyback off that, I mean, Mike Powell jumped over me. I remember I was in college and he was doing that, like the LXM Pro Tour. Like he was kind of like at odds with the MLL that one weird summer. And he showed up with I didn't even recognize him. He had like a gasoline tinted visor and like a t-shirt tied around his head. And like, you know, we were playing against like the Syracuse alumni team. And I'm playing with a bunch of guys I don't really, you know all that well. And I go to kind of shut this guy down, like, you know, down the alley, you know, to try to keep him below GLE. And, you know, I lunge a little poorly, and I swear to God, he took one drop step and then launched off of one foot and dove, and he like scored, and he landed in the crease, which at that point in time you could not do. They blew off the goal, but Mike Powell literally leapt over me like a suit, like Superman. And like, I was like, oh, you know, that was, sorry guys, you know, he beat me. Came off the dude, that was Mike Powell. I'm like, no way.
That's no funny. Way. I've yet to play, you know, and I'm over 30 now. You know, to all the Masters GMs out there, I am a free agent.
Hey, I'm right there with you. I actually was this year I was planning on taking my career to the next level. Like you and I could be a package deal, man.
Yeah, no, I think it'd just be fun to, even though we are working, like, you know, Eric plays in a couple games, and it's nice to break up some of the days, especially if you work that whole week, you know, towards the end of it, those are long days and long nights, right? We're up late and then we're up early. You know, the candle burner tattoo that our friend Jim Bear has, and you have too, right? I mean, that's that kind of says it all.
I was gonna say, like, and I started as a table boy, like back in the day as well. Actually, that was one of my, and I said it on one of the other podcasts, that was one of my favorite, that was probably the most influential thing on my life as far as, you know, becoming a real student of lacrosse is like, you know, I was paid money to sit there and watch lacrosse games all day long.
It's the best job ever.
It's the best job ever.
Especially if you're watching, like you're watching some of the high school games in the start of the week, and it's the top high school players, you know, Brennan O'Neill, who's playing at Duke, is like just putting on a show at one field. Like, I mean, it's just, it is awesome lacrosse, and you're getting money in your pocket to watch it.
I watched Ryder Garnsey like destroying Division One. I was on the same team. I was like, you know, like I'd work tables, and then I'd like, you know, I was on this team, and like, there's this long haired, like goofy little high school kid. He was just torching kids. I'm like, hey, what's your name? He goes, oh, I'm Ryder. I'm like, oh, cool. You know, and a couple years later, he's like tearing it up. Like, huh, interesting. I remember you. Yeah, it's just like you're literally hanging out with the past, present, and future of the industry. Not just the sport, not just the big name scoring goals, but the industry. Like, you know, there's guys, the next guys who are coming out with, you know, it's the next big coach, the next big this, you know, what's his name? Dom Starja still plays. How old is he?
Still plays.
He's still playing. Like he's got something. All brand new Virginia stuff on.
Yeah. I think he wears like one of their old Gate helmets, the ones that everyone hated. Yeah, and I swear he does it cause he knows people didn't like it, which is awesome. That nails home what Placid is to me. That was the question. What it is to me is it shows me that this sport is unlike any other sport. Find me another sport where men in their, or women in their 60s and 50s, are still getting together to play, even if it's one week in a year.
For fun.
For fun. Go watch the Super Grandmasters, you know, or whatever. They're guys who played college ball together 40-something years ago, and they're still having the same fight about, you know, you were a second late to this slide, right? And they're all, I mean, they're taping themselves together so they can play a couple more games with their buddies. I mean, that is so awesome, because for the other 360 days, they have to be whatever they are.
Yeah.
But while they're up at Placid, they can go back to Colgate. They can go back to Brockport. They can go back to Nazareth, and they can have fun on the field with their friends. They can have fun off the field with their friends, kind of the way they used to. It's almost like stepping in a time portal or something.
I've said that once, and I'll kind of tie it up with that. It is little. You can see dads and grandfathers stepping on a field and getting younger by a decade. Like it's magic, and I've never seen it anywhere else. And that's the thing that the Ollie Herbeski Memorial and Lake Placid are the two greatest lacrosse events in the world, bar none. End of conversation.
I got to get out there for one. I will.
Absolutely. So you have 9 minutes. We're on the clock here. You have 9 minutes to tell us about Delhi.
Okay.
Yeah. So, go for it. Good luck.
All right. So I guess like I said, I was a volunteer for a few years. And then I ended up getting the job at Delhi in 2017, and we were in the NAIA. Okay. So if you don't know where Delhi is, it's near Oneonta, New York. It's in the foothill. It's right in the Catskill Mountains, right before you get into the Catskill Park. Okay. And so, I'd never really heard of SUNY Delhi because it was a 2-year school. And I didn't know much about it, even though it was only a couple hours from where I grew up. And they're in the NAIA, which is a league I'd never heard of. Just being honest, I'd never heard of it. So I started to look up a little bit about it and started to read a little bit more about it. But I saw that in our first year, we had 12 games and 7 of them were in different states. And the closest one of those states is Ohio. We were down in Florida. We were in Tennessee. We were in Georgia. We were all over the place. And, you know, I had less than a 20-man roster. And we ended up having a pretty good season, right? But I've been here since then, right? 2017 spring was my first year. This will be my 5th season coming up. Since I got here, we've evolved from an NAIA team to an NCAA Division III team. And the thing about Delhi that really sticks out for me, obviously it's a SUNY school. You and I are both SUNY guys. You cannot beat the price in terms of in-state tuition. You can't.
My parents told me I could go to any college I wanted in the entire world as long as it started with the 4 letters SUNY.
Exactly. And so
me coming I'm back really glad Salisbury, they did. Glad they did.
Exactly. Because me coming back from Salisbury, I went to Brockport and I looked and I'm looking at the numbers and I'm like, wait, what? Like, this doesn't even make sense. How can it be that much less, right?
Less than half.
Exactly. So the other part about Delhi, like I said, SUNY school is awesome, but it was a trade school, just a 2-year trade school up until 6-7 years ago. That's when we added bachelor programs. And so even our bachelor programs are more, they're more kind of hands-on, for lack of a better word. And so the kind of guys I'm getting kids who want to be construction, workers, basically. I have guys who are in HVAC, who are in plumbing, who are in welding. I have, and it's an alternative to your run of the mill college, where you still get to have the college experience of leaving home and living away from home, and you still get to play a college sport. But then you walk out of here with a degree that's not, not to put anything down, but it's not your run of the mill degree. I mean, you and I have a criminal justice degree, and I'm a men's lacrosse coach.
I have a recreation and leisure studies degree. It took me 5 years to get. And I kind of do that, but I work in lacrosse.
You kind of do that.
but I got that degree knowing whatever I did at Brockport was going to be pointless. Like,
exactly.
I wanted the easiest major. I just wanted a degree. The kids at Delhi are probably going to be using their degrees because they're such a
I'll use two as an example: construction management and mechatronics. Okay, they're both bachelor degrees. Mechatronics is a mechanical and electrical engineering kind of combination. These guys are basically going to work on, think like an assembly line. Back in the day, obviously there were humans on those. Now they're robots. These guys are going to work on these robots, programming them, designing them, and building them for companies. Like, I have a kid who played for me who graduated, who right now he's working somewhere where, if said machine goes down, the company's losing X amount of dollars per minute, and it's his responsibility to get it back up and running, right? And so they're working super important jobs like that, and they're all getting paid pretty well, and they've got 5 or 6 offers before they even leave campus. you and I were living in an RV when we left campus. You know what I mean? And so it kind of eliminates a little bit of that 23, what am I going to do for them? But in a good way, because it's putting them in jobs that are going to, you know, keep them, that are going to be there for a long time. Because with the state of the world, you know, and the way the economy is, construction jobs aren't going anywhere. People are going to need water. People are going to need power. People are going to need electricity. Those are things that are going to always be around. And so, you know, it's a cool opportunity.
I visited recently, mm-hmm. not super recently, but that is not a less than 20-man roster anymore. You've hit the recruiting trail.
Correct.
Delhi's, I mean, we had to go off campus to a practice somewhere. But there, how are things looking now? I reffed your alumni game. I forgot about that.
Yeah, that was fun. That was fun.
That was a lot of fun.
It was fun. So I've got, you know, 30 something guys right now. Obviously with the coronavirus pandemic happening, we don't really know exactly what the spring is going to look like, but we've been working hard all fall, you know, to get ready for whatever it is. You know, and it's been a challenge, to be honest. And I'm sure if you talk to any of your other friends who coach college lacrosse, you know, it took us for a month. We had to play with no gear or with no contact. And there were a lot of strict protocols we had to follow to return to play, which I understand. You know, and so, but it's nice to get, like, we had practice yesterday, for example, 73 degrees or something, live lacrosse practice. It's like for an hour and a half while we're up there, you know, you can kind of just think everything's okay in the world, right? And that's the sport. That's the whole thing in a nutshell, right?
And I think that's, you know, we'll kind of wrap it up on that final message is that, you know, I really appreciated that time in the RV playing lacrosse, senior B lacrosse for the Vermont Voyagers in the Quebec League, like, you know, out there living it with the dogs and my buddy. Mm-hmm. And I super appreciate getting to Placid every time. Like, you know, we're both leading, you know, on the grand scheme of things, pretty privileged lives, you know, that we could do these things.
Absolutely.
And I think that when all this craziness is over, I really hope people will appreciate whatever it is, whether it's like, you know, going out to a party but for me, it's lacrosse. Like, I'm mm-hmm. going to appreciate every single game so much more.
That's been the message to my guys every practice. You know, last March we played a game. Weirdly enough, our last game last year was at Brockport. And then, you know, we came back. We heard things were shutting down. Next thing you knew, we were done. So I'm telling them every practice we play, it could be the last practice because next week something could happen and we could be done, just like it happened in the spring. So at each minute that we have out there with the guys, let's appreciate it. Let's go hard. Let's do honor to the sport by playing our hardest and by having a good time. Because, you know, even though you can play this game forever, the touches you have left that are really important are limited, right? And you know,
us 30-year-old guys know that pretty well.
All too well. Yeah, so don't let them slip.
Yeah, but in the same breath, you can play till you're dead, right? You can play forever, right. But those meaningful, those competitive touches that, you know, that glory light, right? The height mm-hmm. of your career is the height of your career. Like, that doesn't last. But, you know, if you're taking anything out of this, you know, this hour of listening, like, hey, those, just because you're not in the height of your career, that doesn't mean you can't enjoy it. That doesn't mean you can't go on an adventure. That doesn't mean it's not leading to something greater or something unique, something fun. You know, it's been a wild ride, buddy. I'm glad you know, we're not done yet. I don't know what you and I got cooking up next, but, I got a couple ideas, but
the one thing that's for sure is I can almost guarantee that lacrosse will some way be involved.
That's a safe bet. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Sam, for joining.
I
mentioned it before we started recording, but you're definitely gonna be back. We could talk about anything for another hour.
Oh yeah, no.
You'll be back on here.
This is my first go.
You're crushing it.
My first podcast ever. Feeling pretty good. Yep.
Well, thank you for joining me on this latest edition of Lost Baggage. Sam Miller, the Mill, head coach at SUNY Delhi. Thank you for joining me. We welcome you back next time for our next episode of Lost Baggage. Thanks. And Sam, we'll see you out there, buddy.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Bry. See you around.
Yep. See ya.